Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. This week's episode is the second half of my 50th live MK3D show, recorded at the BFI South Bank a few weeks ago, which, in the light of the current situation, seems like a lifetime ago. In the first instalment, which was last week's podcast, which is still available to download, we heard from Neil Brand and Sanjeev Bhaskar. In part two, I'm joined by Amara Santi and David Arnold, and we say hello to Jason Isaacs. Now, as before, there's a musical theme to the show, with my guests picking their favourite musical moments from the movies. For obvious reasons, there won't be any more live MK3D shows for a while, since the British Film Institute at the South Bank, like everywhere else, has since closed its doors. But the Kermode on Film podcast will continue. So, in the safety and privacy of your own home, sit back and enjoy the second half of the 50th live MK3D show. Okay, so I said it's an absolutely guest-packed show. We are going to sort of take little breaks and do some questions a little bit later on, and I've got a trailer to show you for something that Nick and I have made together. But please welcome to the stage one of the first guests that we had here at MK3D, and a filmmaker whose work I have loved for absolutely ever. Very glad to have her here at the 50th show, Amara Santi.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure why we've got three chairs. I think they said to me, do you need three chairs? And I kind of lied and said yes. So it just feels like there's a... How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm really, really good.
Now, you have been up to all manner of exciting projects. You've been working on a television programme recently.
I have, yeah. I've worked on a couple of TV shows, actually. I spent 6 months of the previous 12 months in North America first shooting some of Handmaid's Tale, which has already been out. And then... at the end of last year, or the middle of last year, I did something called Mrs. America, which is yet to come out.
Which comes out in April in America?
I believe it does come out in April, yeah. Mrs. America is the story of the women's movement in the 70s, Gloria Steinem, and the movement that she was massively a part of. But it predominantly tells the story of the anti-women's movement and the woman who led that movement, who is played by Cate Blanchett. So it's a pretty interesting world to delve into.
Should we see a trailer? Because Cate Blanchett is in the trailer and she does seem very interesting.
I am not against women. I am not against women working outside the home. But what I am against is the women's liberation movement.
Who the hell is Phyllis Schlafly?
We need to get the word out quickly. We want the right to be a mother, the right to be a wife. The libbers want to create a sex-neutral feminist totalitarian nightmare.
Do you know what you're saying has no basis in fact?
Our movement is about fighting the oppression of all women.
We do not want housewives thinking that we are against them.
We are against them.
Revolutions are messy.
How long are we supposed to wait? How much time do we give people to adapt to change? Or am I the only one who's so fucking tired of waiting?
Mm.
That's a hell of a cast.
So what
was it like? Yeah, it's fantastic. So tell us, was it? I mean, I have no idea what it must be like working in that kind of episode. What's it like? Is it different to feature films? Or what's the
to a certain extent? I mean, this was very different to Handmaid's Tale, which is an ongoing series. Yeah. This is a mini series of I think it's 8 or 9 episodes.
You directed two.
I did two right. of the episodes, and it's I mean it's. In one way, some of the pressure is taken off of you. It's, you know, there is a showrunner, which is the lead writer, you know, on the TV show in America. We don't really have showrunners here in the UK quite in the same way. And so in some ways, you get to go and play in someone else's sandpit. And the big question is, what can you bring to it, you know? How, and so it's exercising slightly different muscles, and it's a different kind of test of your skills. But I loved it.
How much freedom do you have to stamp your own, you know, personality on each episode?
I mean, for me, I specifically asked for particularly the one of the episodes that I did. I worked on episode 3, which is Shirley Chisholm's episode. And Shirley Chisholm was the first woman to stand for president in the United States. And she also happened to be a woman of colour. Mm-hmm. And so, I think they're very much looking for you to be attracted to the episodes that... they're going to match you with, and you need you need to feel a connection in some way to the episodes that you're coming to, and so it's a collaboration. That's the word I would use. It's very much a collaboration, and that's what I find fascinating about it.
And the cast, collaborative, you get on well with them?
Yeah, they were a great cast. I mean, they were funny as anything, and it was so it was just. You know, Tracy Ullman, the other episode I did was Tracy Ullman's episode, and Tracy Ullman's British. I think she was the only Brit in it. You know, she lives around the corner from me now in London. It was funny to get there on the first day and meet Tracy. I first met Tracy 25 years ago when I was trying to remember. I think it was like maybe my second time in Hollywood. And, you know, I went off to her house and there was a barbecue there. And so when I met her 25 years later and said, hi, I'm going to be directing your episode, and I came to your house 25 years ago, do you remember me? She very kindly said she did. I know she didn't. But it was great fun, and you get to learn from them, and they are very open to learning from you, and that's a really great thing.
Because the theme of this show is music, Amra, I want to show a clip from United Kingdom, which I absolutely love. I think I'm right in saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that you were the first woman of colour to have a film open the London Film Festival with United Kingdom. That is correct, isn't it?
I was the first person, would you believe it?
Wow.
Black person, that is, yeah, to open the London Film Festival, yeah.
What an extraordinary achievement, but how amazing that it took that long for that to be the case. United Kingdom, I think, is a great film, really good performances and a strong story, which I didn't know that story before your film. And I think the thing that made it so great was it was accessible. And one of the reasons is there is this fantastic sequence in it which involves on-set singing. Do you want to say something about what this scene is that we're about to see and why the women are singing?
Yeah. So the story in itself is about an African prince in the 1940s who comes to the UK to study and falls in love with a middle-class British woman and takes her back to Africa to be his queen, if you like. And essentially that means that she will be queen over the African women there. And that's a big deal because at the time, of course, Britain rules over that part of Africa. And it was really important to try and create a scene in which this British woman, played by Rosamund Pike, finds acceptance from these women. But it was really important for me to make sure that acceptance had to be given to her by the African women, by the women of that country, that they were empowered as characters in the film to do that. And so this is a moment where exactly that happens. They are, for the first time, showing their real acceptance of her, and they're doing it in quite a, for me, quite a very moving way.
And I'm right in saying that you shot this in boiling heat. The whole shoot was really, really hot.
I mean, I look back sometimes and I don't understand how I did it. But even worse than that was that we did this in really boiling heat over 100 degrees. But then we came back to -5 or something in the UK and we were shooting on the streets of the UK. So your body, you know, my body was just, didn't know what it was doing. But yes, it absolutely, I mean, I think the heat that you feel in the scene, I hope you feel it in the scene, was really there. I mean, it was shocking.
Yeah. Let's have a look.
Yeah.
Why are they here?
They are thanking me for walking the road with them. This song is about you. They are saying Sereze's wife is as bright as the morning star.
It's such a great scene.
It really happened. I mean, that was the most important thing. If you Google really, really hard, you will find images of that moment.
It's and they were incredible. Singing live on set. It looks like they're actually singing that.
Yeah, they were singing live on set. But what was really fascinating was that day, the president, because what I should say is that she is the mother of the now president of Botswana, and he was democratically elected, you know, obviously many, many years later, two presidents later. And so his brother arrived on set just to visit the set, and it was the first time a member of the family had come to visit the set. Yeah. And they spontaneously burst into song for him exactly in that way. It was just a different song. And everything just stopped. I mean, you know, all the crew put their tools down. We all just stopped and we just watched this thing happen. And we were just puddles by the end of it. We were just in tears because it was just a really beautiful moment. And it was a testament, you know, not necessarily to how they felt about that government or that president, but how they felt about the parents of those, you know, that president and his brother. So that was just incredible.
Now, amongst all this other stuff you've been doing, you've worked on a campaign that's connected to Bond, right?
Yeah, it was announced that Nokia is the device partner of the new Bond movie.
And I love that phrase, the device partner.
I mean, I probably said it really wrong and we'll get told off. But there's this wonderful new character that some of you may have come across that will be introduced to us in the new Bond film, played by Lashana Lynch. She's a new OO agent called Nomi. And so Nomi is the centre of this ad. You know, we got to create a Bond-like commercial which really introduces her as a character to audiences before the film. So it was great.
And you got the gig because Barbara Broccoli specifically said, get Amorosanti.
Well, Barbara was very sweet and suggested me for it.
I would read that story as Barbara Broccoli said, get Amorosanti or I'm not doing it.
I still pitched you know, with other filmmakers.
Okay, so you still had to go in and do the whole spiel.
I still pitched, and it was, you know, and ads are quite a lot of work, you know, because you have to come up with a lot of creativity to get the gig, and then you have to hope and pray, and you go through the agency and the client, you know, they both have to pick you as well. So it wasn't just Barbara, but it was lovely that she suggested me. Yeah.
So we'll see this when Bond finally comes out of self-isolation in November.
I believe so.
And feature films on the horizon?
Yeah. So one of the reasons why I've been doing TV the last year or so is really holding on, because we've been casting Billion Dollar Spy and we finally cast the second role. We got two leads, and getting two leads at the same time who are names has been quite difficult. So I can't say who yet, but we got.
Can you give us a hint through the miracle of mime? Blofeld?
It's very close.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It's very close.
Okay. Well, let's not go on because I might say it out loud and then you'll be in trouble. That'd be bad. Okay.
But I might whisper in your ear a bit later on. But yeah.
Whisper in my ear now and then I won't tell anybody.
No. Absolutely not.
We're going to finish, but we said to you, look, you know, choose a favourite piece of music. You said, look, I'm really busy writing a script. So I said, okay, we will choose a piece from a film that I know that you like and that I like, okay? Because you came on, you did A Guilty Pleasure, you did Sex and the City, God bless you. That was very brave of you.
I know. I thought I'd come back and redeem myself.
So you went for Love Actually. Of course, Love Actually has many musical sequences in it, but the best musical sequence in it. And it's, you know, again, imagining a world in which this was our Prime Minister, we could only dream.
Yeah. Mary, I've been thinking. Can we move the Japanese ambassador to 4 o'clock tomorrow?
Certainly, sir.
Terrific. Thanks so much.
Brilliant. That's excellent. Excellent.
So, Emma, here's what I want. When the new film gets made, I want you to come here and talk about it.
Yes, sir.
When the Bond thing, when Bond finally comes out of quarantine, I want you to come back and talk about it. And between now and the next thing, I'd like you to make a film with Hugh Grant. Do you think you could manage that?
Do you know what? Not only would I love to, that is the film I wish I had made.
Oh.
I love Love Actually.
Yeah,
you know,
it's fantastic.
It is fantastic.
It's absolutely fantastic.
But yeah, but wouldn't that be great?
Yes, it would be great. Yeah.
All right. So, from your lips to God's ears, as they say.
Ladies and gentlemen, the director of Hugh Grant's next movie, Amra Santi.
Thank you.
And on the subject of Bond, please welcome to the stage the fabulous David Arnold. How are you doing, David?
Oh, I'm glad to be anywhere, but especially glad to be here.
You've got a series going out on Scala Radio at the moment, fabulous new radio station that's taking the nation by storm, about the Bond movies. And what are you? Because you've always got 3, 4, 5 things on the go. What are you working on at the moment?
Well, that's actually taken me a lot longer than I thought it might, because it's about Bond music. So I'm deliberately ignoring the songs. I think the songs have an airing every time there's a Bond movie comes out. There's an endless list of the top 10 and the bottom 10 and what's the best and what's the worst, and Q, 17 newspaper articles arguing about all those things, and then the bottom half of the internet screaming about who's right and who's wrong about them. That's what's fascinating about it. But you think this is like 58 years old now, this series.
It's amazing.
And it's still front page news. I mean, it's an extraordinary thing. I mean, Anne was just saying she did a commercial for Nokia. I just did a commercial for the people who make the jumpers for James Bond. How about that?
Really? Are they nice jumpers?
They're extraordinary. It's called Enpeel.
Enpeel?
Yes, and it's cashmere. It's cashmere. I mean, I'm not going to wear anything like that, but I mean, it's the most extraordinary, lovely thing. You know the one with Daniel when he's got the, the Roger Moore Live and Let Die gun, the poster for the last movie, I think, for Spectre, where he had this thing? It's all that stuff. So basically, it's his jumper supplier. and they're a product partner. But it's the first time I'd actually written any... It was a favour, really. It was the first time I'd written any Bond music properly for like 10 years or something, I think.
How many Bonds did you do?
I did 5. And so my last one was actually Quantum of Solace. So I started off the Daniel era and closed off Pierce's last 3. And so it was the first time, and it was amazing how... A, how much fun it was, but B, how sort of easy it was just to sort of slip back into it. But whenever there's a new song comes out, it's always, can you come on the radio and say what you think about it, you know? And it's like, you can't really... Because
a new Bond song comes out, so get David Arnold to say
what he thinks about it. I mean, you can only ever say it's great, because if you didn't, it'd be horrible. Because there's plenty of people in the world who are going to say, oh, horrible things to you, you know, if you're involved in entertainment. So, I, you know, it's like always look for the positive in everything. So,
do you have a Bond movie that has a favourite score for you?
Well, my favourite one isn't necessarily what I think is the best one, but my favourite one is You Only Live Twice. And the reason for that is I saw it, this is the first one that I saw projected, and it was a 16mm projector at a children's birthday party in Luton.
We've all been there.
And I grew up overlooking the Electrolux car park. And, and so my view every morning was like 4,000 cars coming in, and then at 5 o'clock, 4,000 cars leaving. And I went to this birthday party, it was at Luton British Legion, and they screened, for some reason, at a kid's birthday party, You Only Live Twice. Now, this film opens with Sean Connery post-coitally being machine-gunned to death. And I was eight. And then you're in space, and then you're in Japan. And I'm thinking, like, when you're looking at the Electrolux car park, I mean, when you're from Luton, everything looks amazing, but this looked like properly amazing. And it was the music, and I thought, for some reason, something definitely happened at that moment. And that's always been the one that's stayed there, I think. I mean, what I think is the best, like, varies, you know. I mean, you can go from Goldfinger and on a Majesty's, but I mean, it's always, for me, it's always John Barry.
Shall we see your Bond music choice on screen so people can hear what it is that you're referring to?
Okay, fine. It's unsurprisingly You Only Live Twice.
Hawaii from Cape Com, we have nothing here. Hold while we check with space track. Hawaii to Jupiter 16.
Repeat. Hawaii to Jupiter 16. There is an unidentified object on our scope closing fast.
I see nothing. Can you give me a bearing?
Appears to be coming up fast from astern.
Hey, now I see it. It's another spacecraft. I repeat, it's another spacecraft.
Chris, this is fine. Does it look like a close pass?
But maybe not. Say again.
Repeat, does it look like a close pass?
Hey, Chris, what's happening?
Right? It's coming right at us.
That still does it for me. I've got goosebumps. I mean, it's the most extraordinary thing. A sense of the inevitable somehow, and nothing overblown. You know, it's not vast. It's not huge. It's kind of steady and inevitable. And he has this way, John Barry. He does this thing. He's repeated it in two or three Bond movies where he has like a sort of four chord sequence, like a code thing, which just repeats, slowly repeats. And then he has these other elements which just sort of add. And you just get the sense that whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and we can't stop it. And you just feel like you're sort of grabbing on, like, I don't know. I know what's going to happen. I've seen it hundreds of times, but I still feel like I don't.
The other thing I love about it is I remember going to see it, and I mean, I didn't know anything about, because you see, like, the way that Bond movies used to work is when I used to see them on double bills. And it's a Bond movie in space. Mm. It's the two things I love, Bond and space, in the same film.
Yeah, and it took me a while to get back. It was like Moonraker before we went back. But
I thought it was... Because you knew John Barry very well.
Yes. I would never talk to him about music.
Well,
if I had started, then I'd never have stopped. And I think sometimes that's a bit annoying for people that you sort of get to know somehow, you know. We talked about a lot of things.
But not music.
I couldn't really. I mean, no. I mean, the things that I would have wanted to ask him about, how did you do this? And, you know, I mean, I've said this before, and I often wish I hadn't said it, but I'll say it again. I just once asked him about songs, you know. I said, like, what's when you're thinking of the song? You know, what's the thing that you go for? And he said, David, he goes, just make sure it's about cock.
Yeah.
I trust none of that will leave this theatre.
Show is available as a podcast from Tuesday. So your second choice, which is, I mean, also a really iconic piece of music, and the thing I love is that you've chosen two, you know, proper blockbusters. Tell us what your second choice is.
Well, I think I've probably chosen these because when I was very young, those were the things that took you the furthest away. You know, yeah. The things that, and for me, you know, You Only Live Twice was like incredible escapism that I couldn't really relate to. But somehow, this sequence in E.T. With the bikes.
Do you hear everybody, know? Literally, the thing of everyone just went, oh.
I know.
It's that thing, isn't
it's
it?
It's that thing. It's that thing. And it's only music can do that thing. And I don't want to bore you with science, but I've been doing some work on how music works with your brain. And where speech, you know, can generate certain emotions, things that people say can generate certain emotions. Music actually stimulates every part of your brain, every part of it. It's the only thing that does. But interestingly, when you are composing, the only part of your brain that isn't engaged in that process is memory. So you're creating something completely new without... When you write something completely new, that's why I think musicians sometimes say, oh, I don't know where that came from, because you've never heard it before, you never experienced it before. Anyway, nothing to do with this. But but I think, like, thinking about why this, you know, this sense of relatable... You know, I think everyone relates to the film because of that, you know, secret friend and one that could fly and could make you fly. You know, things escaping from grown-ups. But just the elation you felt. I mean, this film had planted the seeds of this theme throughout and at the point when he kind of releases it, you know, I mean, I can only agree with Neil about John Williams. He's incredibly balletic and subtle and such a clever reader of a film emotionally. But the way he kind of releases it and he wait, you know, you hold and you wait and then it's like bang and he knocks it up two whole tones. So it's in the, you know, it's just bang and it's all in the system. It sort of makes you feel like giving up or just trying really hard. It's just amazing.
It is the... It's da, da. It's, that's, it's... There is something about that interval, isn't there?
It's that, but it's also, you know, the strings are really high in the tessitura, so they sing in a way that, you know, they don't normally get that high, and it's doubled and lots of boringness. But anyway, it's part of it is the sound of it as well, in a way that it's coloured, because it's not just the line. I mean, the melody is extraordinary, but it's the colouring of it and the weight of it and the way that he holds back and then again like releases with the tune, so yeah, it's just marvellous.
Now you said it makes the strings sing and I can't let you go without, because the last time you came on you sang and you played the piano and it was really wonderful. Can we please persuade you to do it again?
You can. I'll just explain a little bit of the song. I was writing a song with... I thought it'd be interesting to write a song for a James Bond film where he actually thinks about the things that he's done. And especially, you know, the impact that it's had on him. So when I was working on The World Is Not Enough, it might, you know, it turned out that it's a bit grim, I think, for that film. It made it onto the soundtrack album, and the melody is all the way through the film. But Scott Walker sang the original, which I was incredibly lucky to have happen. I wanted to be about him at the end of one of these adventures, maybe just being on his own and thinking about, well, what was all that about? I mean, you know, The World Is Not Enough is a film that ends with him, you know, fighting a person in a a nuclear submarine in killing him with one of the nuclear rods, and he can't feel any pain, so that's all right. Having previously shot his ex-girlfriend to death in a bedroom before jumping out of the window on top of a nuclear submarine. So I thought sometimes these things don't, you know, carry the sort of weight that you might have. But it's Bond, so it's fine. And, you know, the best thing about it is that James Bond will return. That's my favourite part of any James Bond film. Well, the opening, because potentially the opening, it's like you're going to watch the best Bond film ever. And then if it isn't, James Bond will return. So anyway, so this was a song I wrote actually with Don Black. It's called Only Myself to Blame. So I'm going to run over there and do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, David Arnold.
Past midnight, I've driven for days. I've tried to forget in so many ways. I've held other arms, but they don't feel the same. And I've only myself to blame. From city to city, I still see your face. It follows me around all over the place. I shouldn't look back, but I do just the same. And I've only myself to blame. I knew it was love, but when you are young, you think love will come again and again. There's no greater fool in the Fool's Hall of Fame. I've only myself to blame. I knew it was love, but when you are young, you think love will come again and again. There's no greater fool in the Fool's Hall of Fame. I've only myself. Only myself, only myself to blame.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So I'll see you in a bit.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And now, would there be any other... Can I just ask, is he here?
Yes.
Thank God for that. Ladies and gentlemen, Jason Isaacs...
Oh my God! What the fuck am I doing? I know nothing about music. I can't play concerts. I was offered a musical in the West End a couple of years ago, and
I'm just going to sit back because this is what it's just.
I was offered a musical in the West End, Guys and Dolls, and I said no, I couldn't possibly. And I turned it down. I phoned the producer and went, "Are you an idiot? Do you want to lose money? What is this like the producers?" And he said, "No, we can teach you to sing." And I went, "I love musicals. In fact, Evergreen is one of my favourite."
Yeah, yeah.
I love musicals. I love singers. That's all I listen to. I have the gayest play tuner of a straight man you'll ever come across. It's all show tunes. That's all I listen to. I said, "You're making a terrible mistake. Do some research next time." And then my wife's grandmother was coming to stay for Christmas, and she said, she loves Guys and Dolls. Can you get tickets? And I turned it down. She said, well, phone up and say you've changed your mind. I said, I'm not doing a show just to get your grandmother free tickets. You know? So I phoned up. I said, look, I'm definitely not doing it, 100%, because just can I make 110% sure, any chance of house seats for Saturday night? And I went with my wife's grandmother, my grandmother-in-law, and my wife and my grandmother, whoever. Those people. And I came out and I got there. It was a terrible mistake. The producer met me with the score and a CD and the book and all this stuff into the little antechamber. They had drinks waiting for us. And I said, no, you've completely misunderstood. I couldn't possibly. He said, well, just be open-minded. So I watched it, and clearly they have beautiful voices. It was to take over from someone. And put the CD in the car. We were all singing on the way home, and it stayed in the car for weeks. And I sang along with it, and I was thinking, I mean, the truth is that Nathan was written for a stand-up comic. You don't have to sing. You just go, Adelaide. It's not a song, you know. Sky's got the good acting part, but he's got all those minor key songs. Anyway, one day my wife says to me, she goes, you think you're doing Guys and Dolls? I said, why? She goes, well, are you thinking of doing it? I said, probably not. She goes, you're not going to do it. It's a takeover. You're not going to do it, are you? And I said, no, probably not. She went, you sure? And I said, yeah. She went, well, stop singing those fucking songs. You're driving us all mad. But I want to say this about music. Don't leave the cinema, but my friend and brilliant director Ian Softley is in. He's going to introduce Backbeat, which I would have picked, but it's a bit cheesy because he's my friend and I'm hoping to work with him. But the score for Backbeat and the soundtrack, obviously, is fantastic.
Would you say, ladies and gentlemen, Ian Softley, who is indeed in the house.
And
On the subject of rock and music, the soundtrack album for Hackers is coming out. Ian, when?
Record Store Day, 18th of April.
Record Store Day, 18th of April.
A record? What's a record?
One of the best film soundtracks ever, and fantastic liner notes by me.
Oh.
So, snap that up.
Anyway, this has been a nightmare. This is like being on Desert Island Disc. I could never do it because I couldn't choose. But to choose two...
Yeah, but
I was looking for Transforming Ricky Nixon, which is...
oh, my God!
Because Mark wrote the songs for Transforming Ricky Nixon, which
that?
I saw at the Edinburgh Festival, which was fantastic. But I couldn't find it anywhere.
No, I'm sure that... Funnily enough, Steve Hiscock, who is here, was in the music for Transforming...
I did it just to shock you.
I am genuinely shocked. Wow, okay.
I thought I'd get it, but I don't want a Mamma Mia. I want a Fernando Mamma Mia spoiler, that bit where Andy Garcia turns out to be... Have you not seen it? Mamma Mia 2. Anyway,
I think
fantastic.
It's in the trailer.
I think
when he gets off the thing. She says,
and there's just so many things. I love musicals and songs, but you have to, and also everyone else's choices. Every time you got up here, I thought, that was the one I should have chosen. God damn it! That's the perfect choice for this evening.
So
now I'm the dusty bin.
No, you're not.
No, I feel I am. It's all gone horribly wrong.
No, I feel that what you're
doing...
You're
swearing like a...
I know you, I said.
Do you know why I swear like Richard Nixon? Because I'm sitting opposite
exactly,
him.
Exactly, yeah, thank you very much. I have to say, I've said this before, Jason is the first person I ever heard swear in an English class. And that was because we were at school together, and I thought you were the coolest person I had ever known. And then you
tension and the cane.
Yeah, exactly. But then you swore in an English class, I just thought that you are. And do you remember what you said?
But no.
You were reading an essay that you'd written, and it had a line in it which referred to an advert that was popular back in the 1970s, when cries went up of hooray, fabulous, and who made the bloody sandwiches? And that was it.
I said bloody.
Yeah, you said bloody.
Well, I was hoping I said fuck. I can't believe it. I'm so disappointed. I wish I hadn't heard that story.
Jason,
what I want to know is, what are you going to do when your fabulous children make films? Because I know George is going to make films. Are you going to review them and recuse yourself?
There's a closer thing, which is that Simon Mayo is already involved in something which is becoming a film. And so what we've said is that what he has to do is that he has to not do the show the week that it comes out. Because you cannot possibly review a film that's been made by somebody who's a member of your family.
You've recused yourself a couple of times when I've been in some real stinkers.
No,
you've just not mentioned them. Which I find incredibly sweet. Although I sent you a text saying, please rip this to pieces, it's
utter
shit.
I know, but I actually have...
twice, haven't I?
I actually hadn't seen them. That was what it was. I mean,
which is nice. I mean, considering you see everything else three times.
I know. In the case of your. I know there are two films that you're in, one of which will remain nameless, that you said, this is the biggest piece of shit I've ever seen in my life. I still haven't seen it.
No, that's good. Don't.
No, exactly. No,
life is too short. Life is too short. I'm coming to an end very fast. Can I say, there's something very stiff in my trousers because I'm sitting next to you that No! Honestly, Frankie Howard moment. No, I didn't know you'd have your band here, and I knew it was an evening about music.
Yeah.
And I thought, I was just packing, I'm going away tomorrow. I delayed going away to come and see you tonight.
Thank you.
No, please, really. And but what fell out of my backpack, because I keep meaning to learn, you promised you'd teach me,
yeah.
is my mouth organ.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have to take it out when you go through customs, because it looks like a bullet magazine. So
it does, exactly.
So when it came out, I thought, you know what? You were going to teach me. I thought maybe you'd like to hear Mark play some music, although he has already played music, so it's ruined. But it hurts my crotch quite a lot, so I thought I'd take it out. It's not been blown in anger, so it's clean.
Can you play it?
No. I thought you might just give me a little riff and I'll practice it on the way home on the tube and keep people a long way away from me.
So the key thing with the harmonic, I can't see what key that's in, but if it's in G. So no, it's in C, therefore when you suck it, it plays in G.
I know absolutely
It's in
nothing.
C, but when you suck it, it plays in G. So essentially what happens is if you draw, it gives you a diatonic blues. It's simple. Okay, if you blow it, it does this. Which is nothing, right? If you
my dog can do that.
Exactly.
Do something clever.
If you suck it, it goes. So that's all on that. So
that's what.
That's the train sound.
Now I feel like it's got some class in it. So I've got a bone to pick with you.
You got a bone to pick. Be gone.
It'll all be right in the end. Yeah. If it's not all right, it's not the end.
Yeah.
Where do you think that comes from?
Well, it's not me. I mean, I didn't make it up.
No, you didn't.
No, I know I didn't make it up.
I know. That's where we're going.
Oh, who did then?
Old Parker wrote it for a Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. And
It'll all be all right in the end, and if it isn't the end, it's not the end,
and Dev speaks it. And I feel he's not got full credit. He should get a share of your royalties.
Well, I'm absolutely happy to credit Ol for doing that. I've always said I didn't make it up.
No,
but the person...
Go on.
Tom,
I like him to touch my leg.
That's fine. I mean, Tom Hanks was the person who was really impressed by it. So tell Ol that Tom was very, very impressed.
Yeah, well, I should think so too.
Right. Can we move on to one of your choices of music?
Yes.
I feel that the show's running away.
I can't remember what they were, I'll be honest with you. I was trying to get it up on my phone and my battery's dead.
Okay.
So I remember one of them.
Which is the...
I joke because it was whirring around my mind. There were a million emails I nearly sent. So this...
Can I just say, we're going to overrun by 5 minutes,
sorry,
BFI, just
sorry.
So you know, okay? Godfather.
So, it's my favourite film.
Yes.
And when whatever time of day, I don't sleep very much anyway, whatever time of day or night it is, if I'm flicking through telly and I hear just a chord, I have this sinking feeling because I know I'm in. I'm in for the full... Well, if there's 3 hours left, if he hasn't even gone to Sicily yet, you know, I'm in. Actually, right now, I might not be him anyway. But I think they replaced the music late. Didn't he replace the music late? It was someone else all the way through, and then he replaced it with his...
There's an issue about it not being original music. There's an issue about some of the music having been used beforehand, which I think... David Arnold, is that right? It was disqualified from Oscar... Pre-existing, because it was used in Knights in Calabria or something?
I have no idea.
Something like that. Anyway, yes.
But... And also that Walter Murch cut it, and Walter Murch is one of the great editors of all time. And I don't know which sequence we're showing the end or the shooting.
We're showing the end.
Okay, so what I was torn between...
Because we've shown this lots of shooting before, so...
Oh, okay, so the shooting in the middle when he shoots the police chief and Salazzo, I love it from the sequence where he builds up, where he suggests it, and James Caan dismisses it, and that the camera just tracks in, and you just know this is his deal with the devil. But it's sealed here, right at the end, because he kills... Spoiler, it came out in 1972, it's fair enough. But, you know, he's killed his brother-in-law, and he promised he wouldn't, and he waited till his father was dead. And I don't know how much of it you're going to show, but...
Up until the closing duel.
Okay, but so his wife... There's an interesting thing about Al Pacino in this, generally. He's so contained, he's so restrained all the way through. And I'm obsessed with The Godfather 1 and 2. Not so much. But Coppola was talking about directing him. So when you direct him in the first film, you could direct him. And, you know, nobody wanted him. Nobody wanted him to play the part at all.
Yeah.
They wanted Redford, they wanted Caan, they wanted a million other people. And he had to audition. And he'd seen him in Panic in Needle Park, I think,
which
on stage.
Brilliant.
Which is brilliant. But he's a shouter. He likes to shout. He likes to be demonstrative. He'd done a lot of theatre work, and Coppola, he wanted to burst out big in every scene. And he said, I get it, but not in this scene. I think you're right. Your instinct is right. Use that instinct, but in this scene, he can't shout. And he sat on him all the way through. By the time he gets to the second film, he's a huge star. So there was a couple of moments, like, in my house where my wife sleeps. All that, you know what I mean? Banging the table and stuff. And by the time he gets to the third one, he's like, I keep trying to get out there. Pull me back in. Do you know my opportunity story?
Let's just say, hang on, we're going to drop the second clip. We're just going to stick with this because this is a good story.
I can't remember what it is.
No, it's fine. It was the opening of Saturday Night Fever. Everyone's seen it. Anyway, it's fine. Okay. Carry on.
So I was going to Midnight Express as well.
No.
Anyway, so Al Pacino, I'm sitting in... I was in a film called Friends With Money.
You were like this at school. Go on.
I was sitting in a hotel, the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in Hollywood, there to promote Friends With Money, a little indie film. Yeah. And I'm there with the great Simon McBurney, who started the theatre complicity stage, a great actor, directs as well in theatre. And he's sitting there and he goes, can you handle this whole Hollywood thing? You're so casual about it. I said, I mean, we're just having breakfast in a hotel. I mean, I've been here lots of times, but, oh, fuck, don't look now. I said, I get just as starstruck as anyone else. Al Pacino's just walked in, my heart's going. He looks across his very, very crowded room, and he stands up and he goes, Al Pacino! And I shat myself, because you would. And I thought, this is the worst moment of my entire life. Because it's full of people having Hollywood breakfast. And, Al Pacino looks over, goes like that. And he looks at him and then he goes, Simon McBurney! And he starts walking over because Simon McBurney directed him on stage in Arturo Uy on Broadway. And I thought, oh, thank God for that. Anyway, as he starts coming over, I get the dry throat and the heart goes, my voice shoots up and all that too. And I think, what am I going to say to the great Al Pacino? God is coming to sit at the tower. How can I make... Should I pretend I don't know who he is? Or like, what? And then he's halfway across the room and I think, hey, he's not that fucking good. He waves his arms around. He shouts all the time. His eyebrows are doing gymnastics. He's a piece of ham. He's like, he overacts so much. I remember the story about Coppola. And he gets to the table and Simon goes, Jason, this is my friend Al. Al's is Jason. And I go, hey, how you doing? He goes, fantastic. You got to try the pancakes. They're unbelievable. And I thought, he doesn't overact. He's just Al Pacino. This is not trying to stop him. Anyway, nothing to do with this. This is the moment at the end of the film. There's a tiny scintilla, like a homeopathic flash of hope that maybe he's going to be honest to his wife. He's going to tell her the truth. And it's unbelievably tense. There are much more tense and dramatic and bloodthirsty moments in the film. But there is a moment in which you think there's something left of him, the Michael. He's going to talk to his wife. This is it.
This one time. This one time I'll let you ask me about my affairs.
Both need a drink, huh?
Other people come from? They're standing in the room the whole time, or in the cupboard? What? Doesn't matter. That's what they call the refrigerator moment. You know that thing? I think it's a Billy Friedkin thing. where there's a, I think it's Billy Preen, the director, said that, you know, you can have, when you're on set with directors and you go, I'm worried about this, people will think, why have I walked through the door and I had a hat and I don't have it? And they go, and they often, poor directors, there's none in the room, say, well, no one's going to be thinking about that. Yeah, well, they are thinking about it, it distracts you. But a refrigerator moment is where you, there's something that makes no sense at all, but you don't notice it when you watch. You don't notice it when you go out for dinner.
Well, that is,
don't notice it, you go home and you go to bed. You wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you go to the fridge and you go, hang on a second. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
But his whole thing was about putting something like that in a film to see whether the audience were involved. So he would put a deliberate mistake in something, like Karras reaching out with one hand and then it's the other hand, and you, but you don't notice it because you're in the middle of it.
He said he did that on purpose.
I know in The Exorcist it is done on purpose, yeah.
My arse. But, I mean, don't tell him.
No, no, I won't. Ladies and gentlemen, the fabulous Jason Isaacs. Right. We're going to close up the night with a musical number. We're going to do this busking style because, hey, it's my show and that's where we rock. So, at the piano, we're going to have Neil Brand, Stephen Hiscock on drums, Ali Hergy on guitar, David Arnold on guitar, and on vocals, Sanjeev Bhaskar and Heather on the tambourine. And Amara Santi on shaker. Right, Mike, lead the vocals on that microphone. Oh yeah, David needs a chair because he hasn't brought a strap. Okay, you lead him.
One, two.
I got a rocket in my pocket and a roll in my walk. Oh, don't buzz me, baby, with your North 40 talk. I didn't come here to listen, so let's cut the scene. I got a rocket in my pocket and a roll in my jeans. Let's go somewhere where we can rock a bit. I got a rocket in my pocket and my fuse lit. Well, two and one is polished and three and one is oil. Oh, a lot of lip flapping makes my bad blood boil. I didn't come here to listen, so let's cut the scene. I got a rocket in my pocket and a roll in my jeans. Let's go somewhere where we can rock a bit. I got a rocket in my pocket and my fuse is lit. Go, Neil! You better do me in and then get me right. Oh, there'll be no rocking tomorrow night. Oh, ain't nothing he can do, I know.
Ready to go.
Let's
start the verse again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Better to me in and you hit a signal right. Well, there'll be no rocking tomorrow night. Ain't nothing you can tell me I don't already know. Rocking it in my pocket and I'm raring to go. Then left me some place that we can rock a bit. I got a rocket in my pocket and a fuse is lit. Two and one is polish and three and one is oil. Oh, a lot of lip flapping makes my bad blood boil. I did nothing you can say that I don't already know. I got a rocket in my pocket and a roll in the dough. Let's go somewhere where we can rock a bit. I got a rocket in my pocket and my fuse lit. Let's go somewhere where we can rock a bit. I got a rocket in my pocket and my fuse lit. One more time, baby. Let's go somewhere where we can rock a bit. I got a rocket in my pocket and my fuse is lit.
If you want to vote for Sanjeev, call 6345. Ladies and gentlemen, Sanjeev Bhaskar, Ali Herjee, Steve Hiscock, Mike Hammond, Neil Brand, Heather, Amarasanti. Who haven't we thanked? Thank you, everybody, for coming. We have to get out because there's another show coming in here. I'm so glad that you've all come along. It's been really lovely. I can't believe they've let us do 50 of these. I hope they let us do 50 more. Thank you very much. Good night.
Well, there we are. That was the 50th MK3D show, recorded live at the BFI South Bank. The last of those shows for a while. But the Kermit on Film podcast will continue every week. Jack Howard and I already have a few conversations in the bag, and I'm going to continue to record and broadcast from home. Plus, all the previous shows are still available to download at any time. Why not delve into the back catalogue? Stay safe, keep your distance, and if we all pull together and do what's needed, it will all be all right in the end.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.